Drive time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. New year, seize the moment. Talk to a financial broker today about a Zurich pension.
Now, it may seem a long way off at the moment, but when the pandemic eventually recedes, are you dreading going back into your workplace? Or are you one of those who will rush back to escape the isolation of working from home? Well, we heard today that the government is going to legislate to give employees the right to request remote working. Now, the employee won't have an automatic right to work remotely, but the employer will have to give a reasonable explanation for declining any request. And if the employee isn't happy, he or she can take a case to the Workplace Relations Commission. All of this is part of a strategy which also promises the construction of remote working hubs, a review of tax treatment for remote workers, as well as providing for the so-called right to disconnect, which covers late night emails and calls from bosses. Well, we're going to hear reaction now from the perspective of both employers and employees. We're joined by Dr. Laura Bambrick, who's Social Affairs Officer with the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, and also Maeve McElwee, who is Director of Employer Relations at IBEC. And thank you both very much for joining us this evening. Laura, I might start with yourself because you've been calling on the government to force employers to take requests to work remotely more seriously. What sort of problematic responses are workers getting from their bosses when they make these requests?
Yes, so Sarah, this legislation that would give workers a right to request the right to work remotely would just bring Ireland into line with workers' rights in the UK, up the road in Northern Ireland, and right across the EU. And what we've found as a trade union is, without this obligation on employers to take requests seriously, that a lot of them have been too quick to out of hand dismiss requests and dismiss the request by trade unions to negotiate a company-wide policy on remote working. So the legislation that's proposed in today's strategy, as I said, would just bring us into line with a basic right that workers right across the EU and our nearest neighbours have, that once you finish your promotion period, your 6 months or whatever length of time it is, you would have the right to go to it. And if your employer doesn't think it's suitable for their business, they have to give you a considered response. Mm. Now, if you're not happy with that response, the next line, you can take it to the Workplace Relations Commission, and a neutral person will adjudicate on the decision, look at both sides of the request, both from the worker and the business.
Okay, so Maeve, a reasonable explanation for why they might be declining someone's application. The Taoiseach was speaking about this earlier on the News at One, and he was giving the example of, for example, guards and nurses and teachers who clearly can't work from home, at least most of the time. What sort of reasons do you think employers might have, apart from that, to say an employee can't work from home?
So I think, first and foremost, maybe just to say, you know, we do welcome the publication of the remote work strategy today, and we know that a very significant amount of work has gone into the strategy, which goes way beyond just this one piece of proposed legislation within it, and it's certainly a trend that we have seen over the last number of years. And I think one of the things to bear in mind is that the opportunity that COVID has afforded us in some ways to consider how remote working might work for lots of businesses has actually given lots of employers an opportunity to experience it. And I think from our own surveys, we know that nearly 60% of employers are flagging that they're going to start looking at some sort of remote working investment into next year, with a lot investing in training for remote working and training for managers. I think just in respect of this piece of legislation, there are challenges for employers within this, and the challenges arise really when once a right is afforded to somebody, that right, of course, then needs to be upheld. And when cases, and most I would expect largely would be resolved internally, as they generally are in employment-related matters, when it gets to a Workplace Relations Commission situation, that's where challenges begin for employers. Because, of course, we would need to understand what an adjudicator independently might consider to be reasonable or not. So as this legislation develops, there's going to be a need for a really significant regulatory impact assessment here, because employers also need to understand what's considered fair. So at what point does dual provision of office equipment become too burdensome for an employer, or if it's the case that perhaps you don't have an adequate workspace, perhaps you don't have adequate broadband infrastructure. There are huge issues for organisations around cybersecurity and data security, and employers need to be assured what are our rights and responsibilities, and how, even respecting people's privacies in their own homes, are we entitled to enforce and inspect and review all of those. So it's not so much that an employer might be unreasonable, but we just need that clarity.
Sure, absolutely. And just for example, on that one of an adequate workspace, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people at the moment working from their kitchen table or working from their bed, or, you know, some sort of makeshift workspace like that. They might have kids running around them, and they've managed okay, a lot of them. It might not be the most relaxing situation to be in, but, you know, I don't think there's any evidence that productivity has suffered. So if the employee feels it's an adequate workspace and they're able to maintain their productivity, is that not sufficient?
The challenge, of course, is that's not what the legislation requires. So there has been very significant recognition throughout this period of the pandemic that, of course, it's not ideal. But where you would be engaging with employees for somebody to work permanently in a remote environment, the health and safety legislation still applies, and the obligation is on the employer to ensure that your employee has a safe and appropriate and adequate workspace. So that means dealing with all of the appropriate ergonomics, and looking at all of the issues around insurance and workplace accidents. So that's a huge obligation on an employer to be able to manage in an individual's own home or even in a remote environment that would have to
meet
those
regulations.
I might
just put that to Laura and see what she thinks. But what do you make of those points, Laura?
No, they are fair points, and as I said, this legislation will just bring us into line with normal legislation across the EU, in the UK and Northern Ireland. And one of the benefits of us being a late mover and a late adopter to adopting this legislation is that we'll have an opportunity to see how other countries deal with exactly those issues that Maeve has outlined, and we'll be able to hopefully preempt them and work them into the legislation. And what this legislation will do will not just give you the right to request, it will provide employers and employees with exactly that framework about like how you will make the request, what will be considered reasonable.
And can I ask you, Laura, would it be your expectation that if there is a formal arrangement that an employee is going to work from home and that they have a right to work from home and the employer agrees to it, that the employer then would be required, for example, to provide ergonomic chairs or correct office equipment or things like that, health and safety issues?
Yeah, so when you're working from home, the full body of legislation and workers' protections that you have while you're working in your employer's premises carry over when you're working from home. So when a worker is requesting to work remotely, be that from their home or in a hub, they still have the same protections, and that would include providing those equipment.
And do you accept then, sorry to interrupt you, I think there's a little delay in the line, but do you accept then that that might be something that will put employers off in this situation? Because that's a significant additional cost to have to provide that equipment both in the office and at home.
And it might be quite possible that that will be one of the reasonable grounds where a small business can show that that would put an unacceptable burden on them, setting up a dual workspace in those cases. But as I said, this legislation is working for workers in other countries. We're not looking to do anything that's beyond the norm or unique.
I want to move on in just a second, but just briefly, we have a text in on this, Maeve, and you might be able to answer it. John is wondering, are employers insured already against employees having an accident while working from home? He says, I can see claims mounting, insurance companies rubbing their hands already. Is that an issue?
It's certainly a very significant consideration for employers around the whole issue of people working remotely. Yes, so without a doubt, it's very high on employers' minds how those injuries may have come about, and of course the ability to report in line with how you would report an incident or an accident that arises in the workplace, the facilities to be able to do that, and how those claims might subsequently be defended is certainly challenging. And you know, just to come back to the point that Laura is making, it is the case that employers will have to provide furniture and equipment where people are working remotely. And that's a very significant dual cost, because most employers are indicating that where they will facilitate remote working, to be able to manage that organisational culture, mental health and well-being, staff engagement and innovation, it would be a blended environment. So an employer could find themselves needing to provide two sets of everything. And we are saying that where the government are supporting this, it will be important that they are going to help to financially support organisations in order to be able to achieve some of these.
OK, I just want to talk briefly then about the right to disconnect, which is also included in this plan. And Laura, it is available already, or it has been introduced in other European countries. Do you think it is practical? We would all love the idea of it, but given the way a lot of us work in it, and particularly people who are working from home tend to work maybe flexible hours, will people disconnect?
Well, this one is a really important issue for the Irish Congress of Trade Unions. Like we've long advocated for concrete action to achieve work-life balance. And, you know, winning the eight-hour day was one of our earliest and most far-reaching achievements. It's benefited generations of workers. But the existing checks we have on excessive working hours, they're under increased strain by new technology, smartphone technology, and always on work culture, expecting people to be available, and now increasingly with the boom in remote working. So while we do have protections in the Organisation of Working Time Act, that was put in place in 1997. So it's three decades old. It predates the smartphone. So there really is a need to modernise regulations in order to ensure that workers' rights are being upheld, but they're done in a pragmatic way that we ensure, you know, that the needs of the business can be met and that decent jobs can be protected. Okay. So really that's what it's around today, having this code of practice.
Very briefly, Maeve, if you don't mind, your thoughts on the right to disconnect, is it practical?
We would say that the Organisation of Working Time Act already provides that effective right to disconnect, because it has very clear guidance on working hours and rest breaks and the requirement for the employer to enforce those. So we would say layering more legislation on top of existing European legislation, well-established legislation, is not necessarily the way to go. But I would absolutely agree with Laura that for employers as well, people who are always on are always exhausted and not necessarily very productive. So it is really important that we look at good guidance and best practice around how people engage with their smart devices, particularly where perhaps they have both personal and work apps on the device. So
we have to leave it there, but thank you both.
Practice.
Sorry, Maeve, to interrupt you, but thank you both so much for joining us this evening. That's Maeve McElwee and Laura Bambrick.